Welcome, warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your hosts, Jorn Sutai Vampir and Jajim Vestai Jajim, will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Welcome to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. I am your host, Jajim.
And I am Jorn. Read it!
Yeah, read the book. That's our that's our mantra here. And my co-host today and I are going to take a look at a book called Enemy Territory by Keith R.A. DeCandido. This would be counted as the third book in the IKS Gorkon series. And it was a pretty good one, I thought. I'm going to turn it over to John for a brief plot summary.
Okay, on the back of the book, because we always start out with the back of the book, because you're always supposed to take a look at the first page and then go to the back of the book. The Ellebrage hegemony. For centuries, the Ellebrage firmly believed they were alone in the universe and that no sentient life existed outside their home star system. But their beliefs were shattered when a controversial exploration vessel of their own making encounters and fires upon an enemy ship. The aliens return fire and destroy them, then come to Ellebrage to investigate. The Klingon Empire. While exploring the uncharted Vrot sector, the crew of the IKS Gorkon learn that their brother ship, the IKS Krevok, was fired on by an alien vessel and subsequently destroyed it. After setting course to investigate these new people, the Kavach disappears. But a massive alien fleet is gathering at their last known location. Commander Clegg must determine what has happened to the Kavach and who this new foe of the Empire is. As two civilizations prepare for war, the secret agendas of both the Ellebrage oligarchs and the Klingon Imperial Intelligence may serve only to deepen the conflict, and Captain Clegg may also face a mutiny.
Ah, yes. Sounds ominous, doesn't it?
Yeah, somewhat. Overall impressions? This is a good book. Yes, it is. The problem with the book is it follows its two other sister books in this trilogy. A Good Day to Die and Honor Bound are two books together that make such a compelling story. Both of us had read this book a couple of years ago, and both of us had basically forgotten what this book was about. Now, I remembered what its two precursor books were about, so I think this book suffers a little bit, not from being poorly written, not from being an entertaining story, but because it followed two exceptional stories.
That would definitely cover it. You know, this is, as you said, this is also my second reading. I enjoyed it, and it was almost like reading it for the first time. I didn't remember that it was not directly linked to the first two books in the series, but it is linked in another way, that we have consequences from what happened in the first two books
that occur in this particular book. Yeah, and there are references to what happened in the first two books throughout this particular volume.
Right, and, but as far as that goes, this is could be a very good standalone story.
He really tried. It's, oh man, I don't know how much more I can say about it. It just suffers by comparison.
A little bit. Well, and you know, according to Keith, when we interviewed him for CAG Online 2020, he said the sales for this book were not as good as the rest of them in the series.
I'm pretty sure that everybody who had read the first two books went and said, okay, the story's over. And then boom, here, this one pops up, and they probably missed it.
Right. And it was, you know, this one, well, it just ties over from the old books because a number of the people, a number of the Klingons that were on the ships that the Gorkon destroyed at the planet are have now been transferred onto his ship. And they also happen to have the view that Clegg was a traitor to the Klingon Empire for honoring his word to the Santara.
Because they were sold those bill of goods by their previous commander before, you know, during the battle with Clegg to defend Santara.
Right. And then Martok comes in and endorses everything that Clegg has done and says, yes, this is absolutely the way it's supposed to be. And these guys that transferred to Clegg's ship aren't going to accept that. Even they're not even going to accept the word of Martok because they don't like him.
I think that's one of the reasons that Martok was reactivating, re-energizing, bringing new blood into the Order of the Batleth. And it's amazing that people like the general from the prior two books didn't see the writing on the wall that honor was now going to be more important than just conquering a planet.
Right. So, you know, one thing that I wondered about the way this book departed from the previous two was that maybe the next books, if they continued the series, if Keith continued to write books in this series, if those next books weren't going to be episodic.
Aren't most Star Trek books episodic?
Well, there are, but there always seems to be, they always seem to come in groups of threes lately.
Now?
Yeah, there's a lot of, before there were a lot of just standalone novels, but there are story threads that run all the way through all the newer books, and the stories aren't standalone. I mean, they are and they aren't. You read one book and like somebody has been killed several books back, and that still is coming up every now and then.
I think and another thing here is you're seeing a lot of this now in today's TV series, especially those that are being made by CBS All Access or Netflix or anybody. There's a 10, 13 story arc for an entire season. And it's basically just one long story by chapters. And you're seeing a lot of people asking for some of the series to, every now and again, make things episodic. Go in, watch a show one night a week, and it's an entire story. It's all together.
Well, you see, I'm wondering, though, if it isn't our times that have changed this. Because Star Trek original series was episodic. If you missed an episode, if you had to miss an episode for a week, you had no way to record it. It didn't air 16 times a week, you know, so you could catch up. It was on once and then it went away until it reran in the summer, if it did. So then Next Generation was also episodic, and then along came Deep Space Nine, which had a story arc that ran nearly the entire 7 years. When they went back to try to do episodic Star Trek in Enterprise, well, it didn't work. Well, at least as far as the studio was concerned, it didn't work because they canceled it.
Again, the problem with Enterprise was that they didn't go deep into the cultures that had already been established. With Enterprise, you can't just touch on something new because you've already seen it. Enterprise can't go out any further than Voyager did. You can't find any more races than Next Gen did. You're stuck with what's already been established, all you can do is flesh it out. Like what they did with the Andorians, what they did with the Klingon listening post in that two-part episode they had. The story arc season in Enterprise talked about a race that we've heard of again.
Okay. Well, but let's not forget the Zindi, though. The Zindi spanned an entire...
That's the race I was talking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they spanned an entire season.
And then just disappeared.
Yeah, pretty much at the end of the season.
TOS never had a word on them. Next Gen never had a word on them. Voyager, DS9, all gone. They just like they didn't go, they just went away.
Yeah. So, you know, at any rate, the you come back to today with television and you have people who you can record on your DVR. You can record the entire season. You can go back and stream it and binge watch it. And it seems like nowadays binge watching is the thing that people want to do.
But interesting. Have you seen Lower Decks yet?
You know what? I have not watched a single episode.
Lower Decks has gotten back to episodic Trek. It's not like Picard. It's not like Discovery, where you have one story arc that's going through the whole season. Every episode of Lower Decks, a half-hour episode of Lower Decks, is a story into itself, and that's it.
Oh, okay. I'll probably give that a look at some point, but particularly busy this time of the year at school, so it's hard to sit down and watch much of anything.
Yeah, you teachers got a hard row to hoe. I know, I've been there, done that.
Yeah, well, it's all part of the game. We get it done. So at any rate, we should probably get back to our book.
Yeah, we're way off topic on it.
Yeah, well, that's okay. It's our show. We can do what we want to do.
As long as you guys out there keep listening.
Yeah, well, don't go away because we're coming right back onto what we're supposed to be talking about. So we've got this story. The Kavrok is attacked by someone they don't know who it is. And of course, as Klingons would do, they return fire and destroy the ship and then go deeper in to find out what's going on. And nobody hears from them for a very long time. And so Clagg is contacted and told to go and investigate what's going on. More ships come after Clagg, and Clagg reports that, and nine more ships are sent in to assist Clagg, and we get this all-out conflagration between a very strange race and the Klingons.
And to add to that, Clagg is given orders from the new general that takes over, General Golook. I'm butchering that, I know. He's given orders to go in even deeper into Elibrage territory and try to investigate their home world while the fleet tries to engage the alien fleet that has come to meet them.
That is the skeleton of the story. But the real neat part about this book, again, is there is so many different things going on that flesh out this story, and we get some reveals, and we get some new story, we get new characters, we get a lot of character development through this, brilliantly written, that you can understand it all. And I lost count of how many different elements there were going on in this story.
Well, I'll give you an example here. As Clagg is going in to cause mischief behind enemy lines on the planet, they receive word through an Imperial intelligence agent they did not know was a member of their crew, that several members of the Klingon ship that was destroyed's crew are being held prisoners. And you know what Klingons think of prisoners. Oh, God. you should have died before being taken prisoner. Sometimes that just can't happen. And, you know, there's Captain Kirk's idea of lying to them, saying they'll kill him. But we get an interesting scene there that we don't know about II, Imperial Intelligence, in that once the agent has gotten the word that a fellow member of the intelligence community is being held prisoner, he attempts to commandeer the Gorkon and assume command.
Yeah, that didn't work.
No, we went with Clagg way too long to even think that Clagg would meekly say, okay.
Which is really neat, because it destroys the idea that Klingon ships have a political officer installed on board, such as the Russian Navy does. So we get some backstory on Beck Wohl, the leader of the 15th Squad. She has dreams about her past and how she was discommodated from her house and why she was discommodated from her house and how she had an illicit affair and a child came along. She was no longer wanted, and she went into the Defense Force as a non-commissioned officer and distinguished herself as a warrior, changing her name, distinguishing herself as a warrior, and gaining command of this 15th. She feels, though, that she needs to share this information with the rest of her squad, and that brings about kind of a neat dynamic in her story, because when it's all said and done, and this is all at the end of the book, when it's all said and done, nobody cares where she came from or what the circumstances were surrounding her discommodation. That's all in the past. What she's doing now is what is important.
One of the problems I have with Keith's three books is the fact that, I'm sorry, but we learned about her back history in the It's a Good Day to Die, and again in Honor Bound, and again in this book, and again in the next book. We just keep bringing it up over and over again, maybe adding a little more to it each time, but we just keep getting this backstory.
I think we get the whole picture in this one. Those may have been hints, and I don't think we ever got the complete story or the complete picture of what it was until now, when she sits down and tells her squad about it.
Well, at least until you read the next book.
Okay, well, I read it, but I don't remember it. So,
I've already started to try and get ahead of you. You're too fast a reader. To finish out your thoughts about to her telling them all this, if you break Klingon culture into the haves and have-nots, the nobles and the non-nobles, the nobles would listen to her story and continue the discommodation. You cannot be a member of the Defense Force. You must leave Klingon society. But the non-nobles are in the same boat she's in. So they will accept her as one of their own, because she's gone through all these hardships that are basically being caused by those blankety blank nobles up on the hill.
Yeah, I picked up on that. There, you know, there's the division in society. We didn't really see a lot of that in the TV series. We got a glimpse of it when Kor was working for Martok.
Mainly because Kor was a noble and Martok was a non-noble.
Right, and Martok climbed through the ranks and Kor did not.
That could be one of the reasons for the civil war they talk about in this book, where Martok had to defend being Chancellor of the High Council.
You know, I just thought that was kind of neat. The other thing involving Wohl and her thing was the way she went and partied with her with her squad, you know, blood wine and everything else, and they had this big old drunken party, and everybody was telling stories, and it came down to her, And her story was telling her story. We have the story of our beloved ship's engineer on the Gorkon, Kurok, or not beloved engineer, as the case may be, just depending on whose point of view you're seeing it from, who we find out has a bit of a problem with alcohol consumption. And she is basically dying from it. And if she drinks much more, she will die from it.
Actually, the doctor said she took one more drink. And that kind of, I don't know about alcoholism and alcohol poisoning. If you can get to the point where, unless you're already inebriated and have a very high blood alcohol level, if a single additional drink will cause that critical a failure of the body.
Yeah, well, you know, and then we're talking about Klingons here who already have a large capacity for drink, and Kurok has drunk enough in order to threaten her life. I mean, she must be consuming a lot.
She's consuming beer from what I saw.
So anyway, Leskett is the one that introduces this story thread by going to wake her up for her duty shift, which apparently he has to do just about every day.
Yeah, but he knows she's got the problem, and he knows that if he doesn't get her down to engineering, she won't be around for him.
Right, he'll lose his bedmate. But it, you know, and the thing is she goes to Borok, gets treatment, and gets confined. She gets strapped down to a bed to keep her from going and getting a drink. And when she finally does dry out, she's a whole different person.
We can take a little bit more than her just drying out, because she's still, after she's been dried out, she's still wanting to get a drink. But I don't remember exactly what it was that caused her to turn around, but you're right. She was able to take command of the Gorkon when Clagg and Torg and Rotek were not around to command the ship. Unlike the empath on Next Gen, she didn't crash it into the planet as soon as she got the captain's chair.
No, but you know, she went through some tough times there. She went and confronted Clagg, and Clagg broke her leg, just stomped on her leg and busted it in three places, and needed to get that treated too. And then all of a sudden she's dried out, she's craving a drink like crazy, but she's showing some willpower and not allowing herself to have it, and she just gets better and better. And Clagg can't hardly believe when he gets back to the Gorkon after she's taken over that this is the same person.
Well, it's really no big deal for Clagg to break a limb of one of his officers. He did it two books ago with the doctor.
Yeah, he smacked her good. She, you know, and she steps up and does an exceptional job all the way through. But it took a lot to get her there. Now, I don't recall her having or it being indicated that a lot of her difficulty was coming from a drinking problem.
Yeah, that kind of was indicated, is that it was kind of indicated that it was more a family issue than a drinking problem that was causing her attitude.
Yeah. So this was a new wrinkle to the story. And, I kind of like the direction that went. At least we had another reason that was curable, because she's not going to get over the family problems she has, but the drinking is something that can be handled and dealt with.
Well, the family problems could be dealt with too, but Klingons don't have a counselor on board each ship.
No, that'd be a huge weakness. The counseling is...
No, they have a dagger on board each ship,
right,
to take care of emotional problems.
The counseling on a Klingon ship is very efficient and fast. Yes, it is. So, and now we have also Rodek, who stepped up in the last book, and he's doing pretty good here, but there's a bit of a problem. We saw him starting to get his memories back from being Kern, Worf's brother, and they're coming back even more now.
Yeah, we started to see it a couple of books ago when he pulled a maneuver or made a suggestion for a maneuver that he had used when he was Captain Kern back in Next Gen days. And we're seeing it more and more, and it's going to come to a head in the next book.
Right. And as a matter of fact, I think that's what pretty much the whole next book is about.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Do not sell that board. The next book is about all the problems the crew has been bottling up.
Oh, okay. So anyway, isn't it at the end of this book or near the end of this book where Rodek dreams or thinks, Worf, you did this to me, this is all your fault?
Actually, no. It's the beginning of the next book. The dreams start to punctuate, and he goes off to seek basically psychiatric help about why he's having the dreams. Worf's not... I'm like 100 pages into a 400-page book. The fact that Worf did this still hasn't circulated in yet. Bashir has started to circulate in, but not Worf.
Oh, I must be mistaken. I thought there was...
You're remembering that next book.
I swear, I thought there was a line in there where, in a dream or something, he was blaming Worf. I don't know. Maybe, I guess I could be wrong, but in any case, yeah. What about Tok? Tok was sent down to the planet to actually fight the war.
To fight the ground war, yeah.
Yeah. And Wohl was in charge of the rescue, and we've got people all over the place. And one of the things that comes out during this battle is we have the hegemony, the government of the Elebrej. We have a faction that no longer wants them ruling because they're quite oppressive, and we have them joining Tok and the Klingons in order to whip the hegemony and put them out of
business. Bring freedom to the people.
Yeah, and they're so... The other dynamic there is that they're physically so different from each other. They have kind of a hard time understanding how things work.
One of the things that really amazes the Elebrej is the fact that Klingons, these aliens, can speak their language. It's that universal translator that each of the Klingons has that makes it possible. But, well, let's face it, they never thought there could possibly be another language because they didn't think there could possibly be anybody else that thinks.
Right. Well, they didn't know that there were... they didn't want to know that there were other beings in the universe other than themselves, and that would make them superior.
Keith does a good job of creating a different type of alien here, a non-humanoid type species with six arms and having its central processing unit, aka brain, mouth, in the center of its body rather than on top of its body.
Right. And they had 360-degree vision.
Yeah. Yeah, because they have eyes all over the place. And when you say 360, you need to point out, it's not that they could move their working eyes in a 360-degree arc. It's that they had eyes in a 360-degree arc, so they could see front and back essentially at the same time.
Right. They could see everything all the time, and that would have been a big advantage for them, I think. However, it didn't turn out to be an advantage, not a big advantage, because Klingons know how to fight, and they know how to fight many, many different species. And this was a problem. They didn't know how to fight them in the beginning, but they sure figured it out.
The problem they have is the only people they've really ever fought is themselves. And currently, only the Separatists. And the Separatists don't want to fight. They don't want to do anything to draw attention to the fact that they exist and can be a threat to the rulers of the planet. So, yeah, they have no practice at fighting.
And then Talk points out to them that, you know, well, you don't want to die, but if you're going to fight a war and create a conflict, you have to be willing to make sacrifices in order to win. If you're not going to make any sacrifices, you aren't going to win.
Or, to put it another way, just do it.
Right. So the Klingons actually taught them how to fight better.
But again, in the end, did they really? Did the Separatists really participate in the fight? They gave fighter ships, they gave transports to the downed Gorkon ship personnel that ship personnel took to the home planet, and they literally had to open the windows of the transports and stick their guns, handguns, out the window to fire on things.
Yeah. A real interesting way to do it. There was at least one, the name escapes me now, who it was, one Elebrage that turned out to become a hero by dying, actually, and he was honored with a death howl.
That the Elebrage didn't understand. It was the Klingons that did it, and the Elebrage just not understanding.
There's so many layers to this. It's incredible that a person can actually even keep it straight, but it really works.
But most people don't realize how hard it is to really invent a truly alien race. There are so many ways, and let's face it, even Keith falls victim to this, because the only way you can get a story out of an alien race, of anthropomorphizing the aliens, making them just like we are.
Well, yeah, and we have to understand them, and there's no other way. I mean, how do you do an alien that you can't understand? In literature, okay? Now, in movies, they do it all the time. You know, like Alien, for instance. Why does this thing exist?
I'm drawing a blank on the author, but it's an author that was writing in the 60s, and he was praised for his ability to accentuate an alien culture. Was very little humanized. A lot of his stories dealt just with the alien culture, not humans interacting with the alien culture.
Ah, well, and yeah, it'd be difficult to write that. It's easier to show it in movies and TV, but it's a difficult thing to show in writing. I think Keith came pretty darn close, though, with his descriptions of the aliens. They happen to think a lot like a humanoid would, but they also had other dynamics that separated them from humanoid life forms.
They almost had a communication system in their limbs.
Yeah, well, and you know, I read that in another story. I don't recall the title, but they were spiders that evolved on a planet, and they communicated by tapping and moving their limbs.
I could even see a spiders on a planet communicating by tweaking their web.
And this particular race did that also. I read this book about, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. I really thought it was great. There's a second book in the series. One day I'll get to it. But anyway, you know, the Elebrage could not get over the concept of having five appendages out of a main body in a humanoid. You know, what was they couldn't understand. Why is the person's head, or why is that appendage on top of them when it should be in the middle of their body where it would be more protected? That kind of that kind of thing, is what they thought. And the Klingons were just the opposite. How do you not have a head, and why do you have six legs, and blah, blah, blah. I just thought the, I really enjoyed that dynamic in the book, that that kept coming up. The differences in the two races were something, that, an obstacle that everybody in the book had to overcome in order for them to cooperate. Let's move along and talk about the Klingon captives. Klingons don't do captivation very well. It is forbidden. As Kayla said, choose death over chains. And these Klingons, apparently there were 10 of them captured, one of which died at the hands of the Elebrej, during experimentation, actually, and the other one apparently was injured and died. But the rest of them are being held captive. They've been mistreated badly. They're in really rough shape. Included in the in those captives is the captain of the Kravok, Captain Wirk. Wirk, I'm not sure how to pronounce that. W-I-R-R-K. And he is not at all very happy. As a matter of fact, when Tok arrives on the scene to help rescue him, he takes over command and he pulls rank on Tok and tells him what he's going to do.
And there's the fact too that Leader Wohl was taken prisoner, but she was taken off to a different area for interrogation and stripped down so they could figure out what this type of organism was that could think and be alive and not be part of the hegemony. But she manages to escape, and literally she comes in on the prisoners just as Tork is the prisoners.
Yeah, and she's running all over this place stark naked.
That's an image I will not get out of my mind.
No, that.
But it was meaningless to her. It was just the fact that she didn't have armor, not the fact that she was naked. She was looking for anything to cover herself up with. She was looking for anything she could fight with.
Yeah, she wound up with one of their weapons, which she wound up liking. Using their weapon, it was apparently quite destructive. It had several settings on it, and she took down quite a few alone
before she ever found them.
Yeah, the only, other than mentioning that she was unclothed as she's running around this compound looking for the captives. Apparently, she was quite a surprise to others. Tok tells her, "You're out of uniform, Beck."
Yeah, you got to think about that for a second. He doesn't mention that she's fully naked. He mentions the fact that she's out of uniform.
Yeah, and, you know, it's an interesting thing. Of course, you know, a true warrior is going to use what they have, and they're not going to worry about what they don't have. And she doesn't happen to have clothing, so what? You know, she's on a mission, she's following orders, she's doing what she's supposed to do.
And the aliens that occupy this planet don't use clothing either, so she ain't gonna find any from them.
No, they wouldn't know the difference anyway.
I think somebody finally gives her a tunic, but that's not until they've gotten all the way out of the complex.
Yeah, just to cover herself up. So anyway, Captain Wirk he takes over and he decides he is going to destroy this place from within, and himself and the rest of the captives along with him. He's not going to be rescued. So apparently, is he questioning his own honor by allowing himself to be captured, and this is his way of atoning for that?
Well, first, I think Tork did not just let him take over the mission. Tork convinced him or whatever, that Tork was still in charge of the mission. But Captain Weir decided that his new mission was going to provide cover fire so that he could regain the honor that they had lost by being a captive. So they stayed behind. Tork and his people decided that what Wirk was doing was so honorable, so Klingonish, that they gave at least one of their weapons over to the group so that they would have something to fight with when the aliens caught up with them. But yeah, as far as honor is concerned, it was just a matter of Wirk reclaiming his honor in a way that we heard that Clagg had wanted his father to do. Remember, his father had decided once he was freed from the Romulan prison that he just climbed into bed and waited to die. Clagg wanted him to get up, get out, and reclaim his honor, which was what Captain Wirk had decided to do.
Yeah. Reminds you of the Dylan Thomas poetry, doesn't it? Do not go gently into that good night.
Was that who wrote that?
Yeah, that was Dylan Thomas. Do not go gently into the good night. Rage against the dying of the light.
Never knew who that was.
Oh, yeah. A very Klingon point of view. No, apparently Dylan Thomas, when he wrote that, his father was dying. And this was an appeal. This poem was an appeal to his father to not just fade away, but, you know, to take a stand and to fight it, and, you know, to whatever avail. I don't know the circumstances surrounding that. I've just heard that story.
Okay, but that was, like I said, that was that particular set of Klingons deciding that this was the way they were going to reclaim their honor.
Yes.
Wohl was doing it simply by escaping and attacking everything in sight.
Well, you know, I suppose if the others could have escaped on their own, it would have been a different story. Like Wohl did escape on her own and continue to fight and complete the mission that she was sent to do. So, you know, she had no honor to regain. She may have been captured, but they didn't hold her for very long. If the Gorkon had not come along to rescue them, the Klingons that were being held captive would most have certainly perished at the hands of the Elebrej.
So here's a thought for you. Do Klingons have jails? We never hear about any punishment for a Klingon short of discommendation.
Or death.
I guess with a Klingon, death would be preferable to discommendation, but that's it. That's the two. So if somebody shoplifts, you're not going to do that to them. What do you do with them?
Well, I imagine you'd kill them. I don't picture Klingons having prisons. I don't picture Klingons spending resources to keep dishonorable people around and to be reformed.
You don't see any of that. You don't see anything like that on any of the shows or any of the literature that I've read anyway.
No, not at all. There's discommodation, and there is just killing them. I mean, Worf killed Duras and Worf killed Gowron because they behaved dishonorably. Duras was obviously, he was behaving in an illegal manner, and, you know, he killed Kalar, and the only thing that Worf would do was get revenge, and in order to do that, he had to kill Duras. There was no prison, there was no trial, there wasn't even a talk about being a prison or a trial.
Yeah, and you don't hear about the type of Islamic punishments, whereas if somebody steals something, you cut off their hand. It's just, I don't know, is it that there isn't that type of activity in the Klingon culture, or what? I mean, it's just, we don't hear about prisons. We don't hear about crimes short of those that we as humans would think of being capital offenses.
Right. Well, yeah, I don't think it exists.
Honor. We've talked about honor now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about how strongly do you hold on to a religious belief when that religious belief is pounding you in the face?
Interesting way to put it.
And let's face it, that's what's going on here. There are no alien sentient life forms. Sir, this guy's banging on my head.
Yeah, we had a picture of that with the Elabrej. They thought they were the only sentient beings in the whole entire universe. And when the Klingons came along, they tried to do their best to diminish them to the point where they were a subspecies of some sort, animals, basically, and not worthy of being called real people.
What's interesting is the Separatists had no problem accepting the Klingons as a sentient life form and as somebody who could, you know, help them out with their problem.
Well, I suppose if you are downtrodden enough, if you are oppressed enough, that you'll start grabbing at straws. And maybe that would also help someone be a little more open-minded.
I don't know. The religious beliefs could only be held by the ruling class, and the lower classes had already begun to doubt their scriptures.
Yeah, well, that's quite possible. I mean, it's happened throughout our own history. We can see it over and over again. We've talked about a lot of different things. We've talked about honor. We've talked about Korak's alcoholism. You know what? We also should probably talk a little bit about the mutiny that was being plotted.
How far do you take your vendettas? How far do you go to follow the beliefs of someone who has indoctrinated you to them, your commanding officer who has indoctrinated you, even after the leader of your people has come out and said he was wrong?
I guess folks can be really stubborn, and we have a group of Klingons on board the Gorkon, part of the crew, that are just not going to accept Clegg as performing his duty as he is supposed to, and they are going to try to take the ship over.
He's still barking. Try to get him in another room.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Okay, we were discussing the mutiny, and I had said they're not willing to accept Clegg's honor. They're still going to fight it. Well, these mutineers, they don't get very far. They're plotting, they're planning, they're trying to recruit others. They even tried to recruit Korak, who was not having any part of it. They mistakenly thought that Korak was against Clegg alone, but they didn't know that it was the entire system and the way things work, and the way things work in her own family, that someone in the family needed to be part of the defense force. And she said, no, I'm not going to join your group. It's not about Clegg. And, you know, okay, well, we'll move on. And they continued, and they actually recruited extra people from the Gorkon's crew. And we knew they were there from the previous books. However, it fell flat, and it fell flat really fast, thanks to the vigilance of the ship's security officer. Was that Korak?
Lojar, I believe.
Okay, Lojar. Yeah, and he did a great job interrogating one of the mutineers, getting all the facts out of him, and then allowing him to commit Mach Devor.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, is he had all the facts. He was just confirming them with this person.
Yeah. I thought that was quite generous of him to allow him to retain his honor through Mok Tavor, rather than just killing him as being a mutineer, which would obviously be a dishonorable thing to do.
Yeah, but again, are there any brigs on the Gorkon?
No, there's no room. There's not going to be any room. There, he needs to go away one way or another.
So, yeah, it's just, yeah, mutinies, bad.
Yeah. So I suppose we can move into our closing thoughts. We've been on quite a while today.
We hope.
Again, an excellent book with a whole lot of threads running through this thing that just fit together so well because of outstanding writing. That's all there is to it. I mean, any lesser author or any lesser writer would probably lose some of this, creating a whole lot of plot holes and not knowing where to go. But the particular author that did this, Mr. DeCanado, is brilliant. And he's got all these little elements floating around in this story that all come together very, very well. And, you know, my applause to him. He's just great. I really enjoyed this book.
The problem is, if he was not as talented as he is, this book would have been at least twice as long as it is for the author to spend the time that the author would feel they needed to spend with each and every one of the ideas, pounding it into the reader instead of going with the flow. It's an adventure novel. These things happen, are pieces of it, and the reader is smart enough to pick them up and understand them as the story happens.
Right. Okay, I'm going to take issue with you on one small point, okay? And that is talent, okay? Keith Keith has a talent. However, that talent has been developed through millions of words written, lots of practice. And I say that because a lot of people don't realize what it takes to get to the kind of level that Keith is at in his writing career, or any other author that gets published by a major publishing house. I'll put it this way. I went to a concert one night and I found myself able to go backstage and visit with the artist that had just finished the concert. And this lady walked up to him and says, "Oh, you are so talented." And the artist looked at her and says, "You know what? Talent is 5% inspiration and 95% perspiration." In other words, this man had practiced for thousands and thousands of hours to get to the level that he was at, the top of his game in performing. You know, so I don't know what you think about that, but there it is.
The rule of thumb is that no author is going to begin to publish until he has written a million words that are thrown away. After that, they have learned the craft enough. But there are lots of authors who have learned the craft that don't have the talent to make that learning work.
Yeah, I realize that also.
So you gotta have the talent, because you can always, you know, you can always learn how to move that pencil across the paper. You just gotta have some ideas to go behind it.
Right. Good point. So I think we're going to sign off for today. Next month, we're going to be looking at A Burning House, also by Keith DeCanado, which, you know, you might say is the fourth book in the Gorkon series. It's involving...
Actually, Jim, I think you could call it the fifth book in the Gorkon series.
Okay, yeah, I get your point.
Diplomatic Implausibility.
Yep, I get your point. Well said. So that's where we're going next month. If you want to read along, please feel free to do so. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at kag.org/podcast. If you're listening to this, obviously you have already discovered that. So I urge you to pass the word along to others so that they can listen to and learn about at least our take on Klingon culture.
There's lots of little pitfalls in all of these books that people who are cosplaying Klingon, people who are interested in Klingon culture, people who are just interested in Star Trek as a future can pick out and use to develop new and other ideas.
Yes. So, for Bound by Honor, I am Jajim.
And I am Jorn.
And join us next time for Bound by Honor. Kapha! You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kurg Zantai Loon Keej. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplop!